سورة الفاتحة. Please also recite a Surah Fatiha for Marhum Ali Raza Qasimi, who passed away recently in the city, inshallah. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. For those of the youngsters who are writing notes after the speech, you can submit those notes to me or Brother Sirus, if you take the responsibility, right? Just take the notes to him so that we can go over those notes. صلوات على محمد وعلى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد. It is because of the high expectations that Allah has from His creation and from His people, from the believers, that He makes it difficult for them. If He did not have high expectations, He wouldn't make it difficult. He would rather make it easy. When we see the seerat and when we see Imam Hussein's statement about the seerat of the Prophet, by saying that Imam Hussein made it much more difficult for anyone who wants to join him. He just made it difficult, as if it was not already difficult for us. But now, at the same time when we have to practice the seerat of the Prophet, now it became much more difficult for us to do this. And this is in keeping in line with the teachings of Islam, with the message of Islam. That when you look at it, you see that Allah, in the practice of Islam, whether obviously the highlight of it being the seerat of the Prophet and the practice of the Prophet, we see that He has made it difficult for people to reach such platitudes, to reach such heights that the Prophet is describing or he is practicing in his own life. Allah makes it easy on the weak people. Knowing that not all human beings are the same, not all people are the same, you see that those people who are weak, Allah makes it easy on them. Sometimes when we look at how easy it is for others, that they don't have to worry about many things that we have to worry about. They don't have to keep in mind many things that we have to keep in mind. They don't have to abstain themselves or stop themselves from many things that we have to stop themselves from. We see that their life is much easier than the life of a mu'min. And this is natural. This has to be the case. There is no way but that it will be difficult for us to that our life will become difficult, our life will become hard. If we want to be a mu'min, if we want to be a believer, it's like, for example, you have two children. Let's say, you know, you have these two kids. One of them is exceptionally well in the sense that he is very hardworking, intelligent, he's able to absorb things, he's able to learn things, and he's able to know things very well. And you have another child who is a little bit backwards, underdeveloped. Now, would you behave with them and would you make them follow the same practice? You see, one person is a genius and the other person, he's a little bit underdeveloped. You see, that you will not put them on the same level or try to make them do the same thing. That if he can do it, why can't you do it? You won't do that, right? Now, those people who, for example, they are genius, they are put into a very advanced program because they're level of understanding in their mind and their intellect requires that they be challenged in order to improve, in order to become better, right? So you put them in an advanced program, like IB program, or you know, you have all kinds of these sort of magnet programs where you see that those people who have been gifted can be challenged and can achieve what they can achieve. Now, if someone is not so smart, if someone is not so good, if someone is dull, then obviously you would want to let him take his time in learning so his progression can be at his pace. You don't want to put him in an advanced program. That will be harmful for him. It will be hard for him. He can't do that. So that's the reason why you see, for example, when Allah looked at all of humanity, He saw that there are some people who are gifted, so He must put them in an advanced program. My friends, Islam is the IB program for humanity. This is the IB program. This is the advanced program for those people who are capable of taking challenges. For those people who are capable of growing fast. Allah says here, this is your program, right? So don't look at the others and say, well, why can't I just be like easy off like they are? He said, the reason they're there is because they aren't able to live the life you are living. Yes, everyone goes through, for example, hardships when tragedies come. Earthquake happens, hurricane comes, and you know what? Everyone's without water. So everyone has to be without water. Everyone has to be without food. They all have to live through it. But who would do it voluntarily? You see, who would do it by their own choice? Who would do that? You know, this is where you see the difference comes. And that's why you see Allah put believers in a program that does challenge them, that does make them do things and that other people cannot do. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. This is why you see, for example, what is necessary for a mu'min in practicing the seerah of the Prophet, which is difficult, which is challenging him to do and to achieve greatness. What is necessary is what? Is that he have patience. That patience is a necessary requirement. If you're not patient, you cannot be in this program. You cannot be in this program. Seekers of truth must have patience. That is, it goes hand in hand. Now patience, you know, let me define it for you. Patience doesn't mean to put your hands on your lap and sit down. Right? That's not the meaning of sabr or patience. Patience doesn't mean that you don't do anything until something comes and hits you. That's not the meaning of patience. Sabr or patience is defined as whenever there is a conflict between your intellect and your desire. Whenever there's a conflict between your intellect and your desire, that you, for example, face an issue in your life or a circumstance in your life where your aql is saying something and your desire is saying something. Sometimes, there's certain situations, that are no-brainers. You say, it's logical, we have to do this. Okay, your desire is not involved. Sometimes you see it's all desire and no akal. Right? That's the case. But certain situations you face in your life where your reasoning and akal is saying something and your desire is saying something. Your shahwat is saying something. Now, whenever you face those times and situations where you have a conflict between your intellect and your desire, following the intellect and avoiding the desire is called patience. This is the meaning of sabr. Right? When you do, when are you patient? When do you do sabr? Whenever you face a conflict where your akal is saying something, to do what the akal says and not do what your desires say, this is sabr. This is patience. Now you apply it in every part of your life. In other words, sabr requires you to use your thinking. Requires you to use your reasoning. Requires you to make yourself. Now, this is why you see that, for example, it is so important that Allah has mentioned it with truth. Surah Al-Asr wal Asr innal insana lafi khusr illa alladhina amanu wa amilus salihat wa tawasaw bil haqq wa tawasaw bil sabr. Right? That enjoin each other towards truth and then enjoin each other towards patience. Meaning that patience goes with truth. If you follow the truth, you need patience. This is the same way. You have to make yourself patient. You cannot want fast results. Usually what happens with people who become religious and who are, for example, wanting to become good, want self-improvement, make themselves better, what usually happens with them is they want fast results. And when they don't get fast results, they quit. They just lose. They just become hopeless. Oh, nothing's happening. For example, you hear that if you, for example, pray, or if you make this dua, or if you do this amal, then this is the reward for it. So now, they start doing it. A year goes by, 2 years goes by, and now, all of a sudden, because they have been regular in doing this worship, in doing this amal, in reading this dua, now they think that they deserve a visit from an angel. They're like, I haven't seen any angel come down to me yet. When am I going to get the angel? They're very impatient. Right? They're very impatient. Yes. I assure you one thing. And you can keep it in mind and you can tell everyone you know that, listen, if you're expecting an angel to come to you, don't be impatient. One day an angel will surely come to you. Allah will send you an angel. Right? It's Malakul Maut. It will come. It's sent by Allah. And Allah will send it to you. And you will see an angel in your life. Don't worry about it. Before you die, you'll see it. So every human being will see an angel. But people are impatient. They want results right away. They want to see results right away, and it doesn't happen like that. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, Islam, obviously, the goal itself in its root wants us to achieve peace, wants peace. It wants us to have peace, right? And when you look at this, you see that this patience is for what? This patience is to achieve peace. Through the rules of Islam and through the message of Islam, we know that the goal of Islam, through patience that we have in all the different circumstances we face in our life, is to achieve peace. Look at all the rules of Islam. How does Islam want you to achieve peace? Islam wants you to achieve peace. But this Islam, which wants you to achieve peace, this remembrance of Allah, which brings about peace. Right? Allah, بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَطْمَئِنَّ الْقُلُوبِ. Right? With the remembrance of Allah, you have peace. Right? You achieve a peace of mind. So this deen, which brings about peace, the remembrance of Allah, which brings about peace, Islam itself, which brings about peace, the same Islam also takes away your peace. The same Islam also takes away your peace. This is, you know, what I mean to say, that when we want to discuss things, we want to discuss things in depth, so that you understand things in depth. Islam, on one hand, wants you to have peace, but on the other hand, takes away your peace. On one hand, it says, listen, Islam is about peace and this and that, this and that. And then it says, Imam Hussein comes along and says, this is what you have to achieve in your life. And you're like, but that is going to make my life hell in trying to achieve this height. He says, you have to practice the seerat of the Prophet, but Ya Allah, if I try to do that, my life will become hard. I will lose my peace. I'll lose my peace. I'll lose my tranquility that I have, you know. It has to be messed up. So now with all of this going on, at the same time Islam is saying that we will take your peace away also. Look at the rules of Islam. When you look at the rules, what are these rules of Islam that Allah wants us to do? Right? I mean, all the rules of akhlaq that we see. I want you to see these akhlaqi rules. What are they for? He says, don't look at the world of other people. Meaning the wealth of other people. Right? When you look at the wealth of other people, it will disturb you. In order for you to have peace, don't look at it. Don't make your eyes go towards it. You know, oh, he has such a car. Oh, he has such a house. Now what happens? My life was going very well until I saw that. Now like, you know, how can I get it? Now I'm disturbed. You see? This is how Allah is saying this. And this rule is for what? So that you can have peace. Right? For example, Allah says that you shouldn't backbite. And you shouldn't say wrong things about others. Why is that? Because by backbiting, obviously it's not hurting him, this and that. Yes, his reputation is something else. But the eventual thing that's happening is that when he gets to know about this, his peace of mind will be taken away. That why is he saying this about me? You see, again, don't do this. Why? Because this will disturb the peace in the society. This will disturb the harmony and the tranquility in the society. That's what it's about. The rules of Islam, you see, the rules of akhlaq are to maintain peace, to bring about peace, same time, but through hardships, right? Don't do ghibat, don't backbite. Now, for example, you get to know something about someone, you got to hide it. You know how hard that is for some people? You know, life here has become, you know, for so isolated for people that the reason they don't bite is they don't meet each other. Right? They live on their own in their house. That's it. You know, you see someone at the masjid, you know, that's it. You don't know each other. If you get to know one another, if you get to know something about someone that is negative, imagine what will you have to go through in order to keep that inside of you. How hard will it be? You saw this brother that you used to meet at the masjid, you saw him at Hard Rock Casino. On the poker table. Right, and now what happens when you see him? What will happen? Tell me. How hard will it be for you to keep this to yourself? You see? Understand this. Yes. So, Allah is making you go through hardship in order to achieve peace in society. Right? You're going through difficulty in order to do that. This is what's hard, my friend. You see, all the rules of akhlaq are hard on us. But the eventual thing is peace. So now Allah wants us to get peace for what? See, Allah, all of these rules you made in order to create peace in the society, in order to create harmony in the society, tranquility in the society, for what? What's the purpose behind it? Also, I mean, you know, so that we can live happily ever after? Allah is saying, listen, I took away your peace in order to create peace. I took away your peace in order to create peace. Create this harmony, create this tranquility in the community, in the society, in amongst human beings. All of this is for what? All of this is being done in order that what? That peace that we eventually find in the society after making it hard and difficult on ourselves, that peace we can gift it to Allah. And friends, you know, the irony of human beings is this. And this last part is what we avoid. Right? This last part is already, even if you go to the extent that, you know what, I won't do ghibat, I don't do all these things, this and that, so you found peace and all these things there. But for what? What are you now going to use it on? And that's where we stop. We stop there, we don't want to do anything. In fact, you know, we do the wrong things then. You know, all this advancement that has been made, all this advancement that has been made, where now we can cook with a push of a button. Food is ready. We can pay our bills with a push of a button. It's done. In fact, most people pay their bills while they're in the majlis. I have to pay my bills. You know, where are you going to pay them? In the majlis, you know. They're paying their bills there, right? And so what happened is that when you look at this, that all of this advancement is made for what? All of this, these new technologies that we have that make our life very simple is made for what? So that we can have more time. Right? So that we can have more time, right? I don't need to spend 2 hours to cook food. Now I can do it in 5 minutes. I don't need to, for example, go here and there to pay my bills. I can do it from home and save hours. So now, all of this time is being saved for us through all this advancement in knowledge. Now, when all this time we have, where do we spend it? See, understand this. Where do we spend it? We have a lot of time, right? I mean, we are living in the 21st century. We are living in a very advanced society. We are living in a place where we have so many conveniences. So we must have time. So now, it's ironic how that now the only thing we don't have is time. How we don't have is time. Oh, we can't come. We don't have time. We're busy. What are you busy with? You see, this is the irony, my friends. This is where we spend it wrong, where we are heading in the wrong direction. That's why when Allah made that peace, made it easy for us, in order to do what? In order that we give it back to Allah. That Allah, this peace is for you now. Now, for example, I don't fear dunya. I don't fear not having wealth. I don't fear not submitting to others. I don't fear all these things. But at the end, what are you saving this fear for? You see, now is the time that I don't fear anything. So now you have to utilize that fear somewhere. And that fear, again, Allah. You fear Allah? Yes, I want to fear Allah. Allah, you're the only one I want to fear. You're the only one I want to be scared of. You are the only one that I want to be answerable to. You're the one. My friend, Allah says, I take away your peace in order to give you a second peace. When you fear me, when you are going to give that peace over to me, then I will give you a peace that will be something else. I'll just mention an ayat, inshallah, in regards to this, and we will go on from here. He says that Allah, He says in the ayat of the Quran, مَنْ قَافَ مَقَامَ رَبِّهِ. He says, whoever fears the maqam of his Rabb, of Allah. This is this, whoever fears that, whoever has that in his heart, right? That is a different sort of Allah. When you do that, then there's a different sort of peace you get that we haven't experienced. The awliya have experienced this. Aimma have experienced that. Those people who have reached that stage have experienced that peace. We haven't experienced that peace yet. You know, we are still trying to, you know, gain the initial peace. This is where it comes down to. That peace is where you see, and that's why it's difficult. When you look at the Prophet, when you look at the Imams and their seerat, and when you look at yourself, there is a disparity. This is the reason that you cannot say that I'm like the Prophet. He did this, I did this also. He found peace, I found peace. No, the peace you found is different than the peace the Prophet found. The love he has for Allah is different than the love you have for Allah. The reasoning and intention that he had when he prostrated before Allah is different than the reasoning intention that you have. It cannot be the same. Sometimes, and this is where we make the mistake. Well, how did this come about? Let me explain that if you send a salawat. As an introduction, after looking at the seerah of the Prophet, and I've mentioned those places where he had to deal with a lot of ignorant people, a lot of people who were just completely, backward, hard-headed, hard-hearted, merciless, people who were such that you would know that, you know, if they're living now, they'll be hardened criminals, right? These sort of people, when you look at the Prophet, live amongst such people. The only thing we feel is that really, how mazloom was he? How really oppressed was he? How oppressed is he that he's living among such people? This is, my friends, even though the Prophet in his practice, and we see this, in his practice, in his way of life, was very much at the level of the people. He was at the level of the people. I gave you examples yesterday. Even right now, you know, for example, a Bedouin, came to the Prophet and he offered him a gift. He offered him a gift. And so Rasulullah accepted the gift. He said, thank you. He accepted it. As soon as he accepted it, the Bedouin said, so where's my money for it? Right? So what happened? Rasulullah started to laugh. His companions started to laugh. And the person also started to laugh. Right? And he made everyone, like, you know, as a joke he was saying this. As a joke he was saying this. Rasulullah liked his mannerism so much that every time when he used to be amongst his companions and they would be like, you know, sad or they would be dry, he would say, I wish we had that one person amongst us who can make us laugh. You know, he always remember that, you know. You know, I want that guy, you know, and he's around, you know, he makes everyone happy. Right? Now imagine the seerat. He was so much amongst the people, so much with the people, that it was easy for them to approach him. There was no hardship in approaching him at all. You know, that they would just come up to him asking questions. Ya Rasulullah, what is this? This and that. You know, that's it. They'll ask him like that. You see, this habit that Rasulullah had, and obviously he made it such that eventually he changed the hearts and the practice of most of the people who lived in that land. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
The idea is that the Prophet, he lived amongst the people like the people. Like amongst them in such a way that they would think that he is one of us. You would not recognize him if you know, like were around him just like that. You would know that he's the Prophet, this and that. Many people came to him and saying, okay, where's the Prophet? Where's the Prophet? They were expecting someone in like rich clothes, a crown on their head, This is the Prophet of God, here he is. And you will see he's one amongst the people. Right? This was the way of the Prophet. And he himself says that even when you want to speak to people, he says, كَلِّمِ النَّاسِ عَلَى قَدْرِ أُقُولِهِمْ. Speak to the people at the level of their understanding. Right? You might be a scholar. You might have learned a lot. But when you are speaking to the people, right? Don't speak in a way that they'll say, this is a big guy, He's so big and he's so learned. He's so this, we can't even talk to him. That's not the way that we speak to the people. That's not the way that you speak to others. Even if you know, make yourself such that you are amongst them. This was the way of the Prophet. Now, my friends, understand this much. If Rasulullah didn't say anything, right? If he didn't say everything, many things were hidden. There's a hadith I want to share with you here from Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Imam said, "Ma kallama Rasulullah ibadahu bi kunhi aqlihi qatto." He says that Rasulullah did not speak to the people from the depth of his understanding. He didn't speak to the people from the depth of his... Kunhe aqlihi means that, where his height, where the height of his aql is. Where his aql and his intellect reaches, he didn't speak to them in that way or from that. So this hadith is showing that there are many things Rasulullah did not tell the people. There are many things that he did not express to the people. Why? Not because he couldn't, it's because they couldn't take it. They couldn't handle it. Even the things that he said, you see those people were becoming shocked and they were protesting and opposing him. What are you saying? We have no understanding of what you're saying, this and that. Many things of his understanding, you see that he did not say it. He did not express it. So most of the people who lived in that time of the Prophet thought that Rasulullah is, one of us or a little bit better than us. A little bit better than us. That was their image of Rasulullah. That's what they thought of Rasulullah. When we look at the Prophet, is different than how they looked at the Prophet, people who were living with him. The companions who were living with him, when they looked at the Prophet, they weren't raised going to, for example, Islamic schools and learning, he's the messenger of Allah, he's infallible, he is this, he's that. Right? They didn't grow up learning that. When we look at the Prophet, it is different. Now if Rasulullah comes, we'll just be in awe. We'll just be in love. We'll just be in adoration. We'll just be like, Ya Rasulullah. We just want you to be here. Just imagine if he comes. How will you feel? If he comes. Imagine this, my friends. So the people at that time, they didn't have that view of him. They said, yeah, he's a good man. He's a very good man. He's a really nice man. Very good. Now, would you say that about him? He's a very good man. You should meet him also. He's very good, very good. That's something you'll say about, like one of you, MashaAllah, he's a good person. MashaAllah, you should meet him. Great guy. Right? But that's not how you would talk about the Prophet. You see, your view of the Prophet is different than the people of that time. Their view of him was different. And this view that you have of the Prophet, this view that you have of the Prophet is not accidental. This didn't come about by accident. My friends, this view that you have the Prophet, this respect and honor that you have the Prophet, if anyone would do or say something to dishonor the Prophet in the minutest way, you will stand up and say something. You will say something, right? We'll be like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? No, that won't be the case. You know, I mean, you'll stand up for it. Many times Rasulullah was, you would say that, disrespected by many people who were Muslims who were with him. And no one stood up and said, you know, how dare you speak to him like that? No one said that. And they'll come and disrespect him. They'll come and talk to him down. Right? And the others are looking at the Prophet and say, all right, you know, so answer him. They'll come and throw doubts at the Prophet. He says, all of this you are saying, are you sure this is the case? I don't believe that. Then everyone's like, really? Why? Well, because of this, 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 that. Makes sense. So Rasulullah, what do you say? Understand this. This is the way it happens. Now you, when you look at that behavior, if that happens in front of you, see, if that happens in front of you, how would you react to that? He said, hey, brother, come over here. Why don't you talk to me first? And I'll answer your question. You don't need to go to the Prophet. I can answer your questions. I can answer your question. Come over here on the side. I'll answer your questions. No, no, really answer. No, nothing like wrong or something. Right? Why? Because I don't want you to, you know, go to the Prophet not knowing his position. I don't want you to approach the Prophet not knowing his position. You approach me first. I'll take the brunt of your ignorance. And then when you grow and become more deliberate intelligent, then I'll take you to the Prophet when you deserve it. Right? I mean, this would be what we want to do, right? Something that we want to do. See, understand this. My friends, the view we have, why do we have so much respect right now? This is what I want you to understand. Why do we have so much honor for him right now? Why do you want to have so much love for him right now that you cannot tolerate anything being said about the Prophet? Where did you get this view from? My friends, this view is not an accident. This was the effort of Ahlul Bayt to instill the love of the Prophet in your heart. This is the training of the Imams. That today we have this adoration for the Messenger of Allah in such a way, this love for Rasulullah. They taught us about him in the true sense. And those who did not go to the door of Ahlul Bayt to learn about the Prophet, they are still struggling to find peace with the understanding of the Prophet. I mean, is the illiteracy of the Prophet an issue with us? Is the non-infallibility of the Prophet an issue with us? Is the fact that he is the representative of Allah in every aspect and every manner, is that any sort of issue with us? Oh, much more than that I can go into. Of, you know, we haven't even gone into who the Prophet's reality, what the Prophet's reality is, what his haqiqat is, what his maqam is in front of Allah. We haven't even gone into that. When Ahlul Bayt showed us that, taught us that. So the seerah of the Prophet was hidden. It was taken away from us. It was taken away from us. Really it was. So many false hadiths were put in the books. So many false riwayat and history was put in the books that when you read it, You would also think, not only is he not like us, man, this guy is. You know the examples. You know the example. Many people have written books. You know the example of that guy who wrote the book about the Prophet in India, Rangila Rasool. You know the example of that guy who wrote that book. Hindu wrote a book about the Prophet. He said he's a colorful prophet. Right? Muslims took him to court in India. And when he went to court, he showed them that everything I wrote is either from Bukhari or Muslim or these books. Here, take it. I have not written anything on my own. It's all in there. So how can you say I'm bad when it's in your books? How many false hadiths were put in this book and these books and this history so that, I mean, really what makes me not understand is this, you know, where did you get Islam from? We all, where did we get Islam from? Right? I mean, like, who gave Islam to us? Prophet, right? Or did you get Islam from somewhere else? Right? Who did the revelation come to? Who did Allah send to us as a messenger? Who did the Quran, who was the Quran revealed upon? Right? Who told us this is the Quran? Right? He did that. Now, obviously, your whole deen is depending on the character of Rasulullah. Your whole religion is depending on the character of Rasulullah. So why is it that you are taking this aim and targeting purposely the very basis of your religion? Why are you doing that? This is the very basis of your religion, and you are saying that, listen, we want to destroy our religion. We like hurting ourselves. I mean, this attitude is like sadistic attitude. It doesn't make sense at all. Your whole deen is on the character and the life of the Prophet. He's the one who said, this is Quran. You don't get Quran. How do you know this is Quran? Right? What if he kept a few ayat to himself? Right? How would you know? How would you know the difference? You won't know. It is he who said, this is Quran and this is Hadith. These are my words, these are Allah's words. And we trusted him. We trusted him, right? My friends, I'm trying to say this. These people have done so much to damage their reputation and the character of the Prophet by writing false things. False things. That now, how do we know what the seerat of the Prophet is? How do you know what the seerat of the Prophet is? That's why someone else must be there to show us that, listen, this is the seerat of the Prophet. See, this is what happened. So now, the best way to know who the Prophet is, is Ali. And I'm saying this to you, let me explain why. Let me give some reasoning why. Right? My friends, us knowing Rasulullah, for example, you know, there's certain things, for example, you want to learn about someone, so you have to compare him. Right? You compare him. You know, like for example, you say, Apple computers are good, you know, if you want to know how good they are, if you compare them to IBM, and that's how you'll see. Right? You see that? Now, obviously, you don't take something that's very high and try to compare it to something that's very low, that's way out of there, and say that, you know, in comparison to him, he's good. That's not a praise. You know, for example, if I say that, you know, if you compare Rasulullah to Abu Sufyan, Rasulullah is a great man. What kind of comparison is that? What kind of comparison is that? I mean, you know, that is an insult to Rasulullah even to put them in the same sentence. Anyone is better than Abu Sufyan. Don't try to compare the Prophet with him. You come over here and say, you know, in comparison to Yazid, Imam Hussein was a great man. What kind of comparison is this? This is not how you compare things. When you want to compare someone, at least bring someone who's closer. Someone who's, you know, next to, so that you can see the difference and say, yes, this is the case. Right? I mean, when you want to praise someone, you don't bring like low lives and scumbags and, you know, try to compare them to someone who is esteemed in your eyes. This is, my friend's idea, that we, when we want to compare and know the Prophet, when we want to know about him, then it means that we have to compare him to someone who's closer to him. Now obviously, when we looked at everyone, when we looked at everyone else, there was no comparison. We looked at all the companions, there was no comparison. And really, to compare the Prophet to any one of them would be an offense to the Prophet, an insult to the Prophet. Not even close did they come to reaching his understanding, his faith, his ideology, his sabr, his practice of the deen. Understand this. Sometimes when you look at this, this is what it means. This Rasulullah, who was so compassionate to the people, where do you find the example of that compassion in any of them? Look around. Give me a history. Especially when he's the ruler. When he's the ruler, you know, his compassion was so much that he would just take the brunt of the ignorance of people on his own shoulders. Finish. Not want to say anything. He himself says in the Quran, Allah quotes him, he says, you know, إِنَّا قَوْمِ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. Allah, my people do not know, forgive them. With all the hardships, tell me who amongst the Muslim rulers practiced the compassion of the Prophet. Anyone who would, you know, who would in any way defy them, right, would have to face court and death. Right, and there was no court, so just death. You know, I mean, look at all the history, you'll see it. It's all clear, I don't have to say anything. History is there. Who amongst them? That's why we needed an example. We needed someone to say, listen, what is the seerat of the Prophet? There is a veil between us and the seerat. There is this veil of ignorance in this dark period between us and the Prophet. Tell us, what was the seerat of the Prophet? That's why the only one who could truly depict Rasulullah's lifestyle and live his lifestyle and was the example of the seerat of the Prophet was Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now, I want to give an example also. So you understand this, my friends. Imam Ali is the Khalifa of the Muslims. When he became the Khalifa, the boundaries of Islam were larger than any other Khalifa before him. When he assumed, you know, when he assumed Khilafat, it was after them. So the boundaries were larger. He was his army was bigger. He was more powerful, more established as the ruler, right? This is Imam Ali in Kufa. All right, let me give an example of Imam Ali in Kufa. He's walking in the street of Kufa. And he sees a woman carrying groceries. And, you know, they're heavy. Imam Ali went to her and offered her help. He offered her help. And so, you know, she was happy someone would help him, you know. Bad times, no one helps nowadays, you know. This and that. So as they were going home, you know, she's speaking to Imam Ali. And I want you to keep the seerat of the Prophet that you know now with the seerat of Ali. You know, this is how we learn. And as she's going, she said, you know what? All these hardships are here. My life has become hell. My life has become bad. And it's all because of Ali. It's all because of Ali. He did it. My husband was killed in the battle. My brother was killed in the battle. Now I have no men in the house. I have to do all the work. I'm in such a situation, this and that. Imam Ali's hearing this. And really, you know, I mean, my friends, imagine this. It's not that easy. It's not that easy. Especially when you are responsible, when you are in charge. You know? Just to give an idea of what is being said and what Imam Ali is feeling. If you overhear your child, see them on Facebook or on the email, say, you know what? My father really doesn't know what he's doing. He's just bad, and my life has become hell because of him. Imagine how you would feel. Imagine how you would feel. I don't know them. I mean, you'll feel like, you know, what am I doing? Right? Imam Ali heard her whole story. They went to the house. Imam Ali said, you know, Ali is not that bad. Ali is not that bad. He said, no. You know, he killed my husband, he killed my brother, he killed all the men in my household. Now obviously they went with Imam Ali to fight. On his side, they were on his side. They went with Imam Ali, they were his soldiers. And obviously they go for jihad. Jihad means there's risk. You know, you die. That's it. But Imam Ali's in charge, so it's not his fault. He had to go there. This is jihad. It's Allah's war. So now when you go there, when he heard that, he said, you know what? I want to do something for you. You know, so what he did is that he said, you know, how many kids do you have? I have all these kids. He says, you know, let me make dinner for you. Imam Ali started to chop up the groceries, take them apart, make the bread, make the dough for the bread in the house. And when the kids came, the kids were there, he would be playing with the kids and telling them. He would put his hand on the kids and says, do not blame Ali for what has happened. Yeah. Paying them. Understand this. This is, and you know, when he made the food, he fed the children. Fed the children himself. And as you know, as he was making the bread, he went to the fire and says, and he's speaking to himself. He says, Ali, the fire is hot. You think this fire is hot? The fire of hell is hotter. This is, understand this. This is Imam Ali. This is the seerah, right? Imam Ali, when he made the food, he served the kids, showed them love. You know what? The lady was thankful. She appreciated what he did, that he helped her. He gave her some rest, some time to rest. You know, it was only when someone came and saw Ali and they said, you know, do you know who that is? He said, you know, no, I don't know. Just a very good man. He says, this is Ali ibn Abi Talib. You know, and she just looked towards him. Imam Ali had gone. He looked towards him and says, why am I saying this about Ali? And friends, you know, this is the seerat of the Prophet. This is where we learn the seerat of the Prophet. My friends, if today Rasulullah came and stood in front of you, how would you be your behavior? I have known people who have seen the Prophet in their dreams. I have known people, you know, have seen the Prophet, and they said, you know, we saw the Prophet in a dream, this and that. And you know, every time that they spoke about the Prophet in their dream, every time they spoke about the Prophet in their dream, they said that, you know, everyone I spoke to, they said that, you know, we were just too embarrassed. Just, we could not see him eye to eye. So much love we have for him. You know, when you love someone so much, when you respect someone so much, and honor someone so much, how can you just look at him? You'll be bowed down before him and said that.
that I feel ashamed to just look at you like this. And that you look at me, I'm ashamed, really. All of our life comes before us, my friends. This is because of the sacrifices of Ahlul Bayt that you have this honor for Rasulullah. This is why you have this honor for his love, that you love him so much. This is why that even when Rasulullah was there, they disrespected him. You know, maybe there, I don't know how Allah designed Karbala. How he has written Karbala. You know, I mean, really, it is beyond our imagination that anyone can even write a script like this. You know, Allah, it's as if Allah is saying, you know what, I will give you another chance. I will send the image of my prophet. I will send the image of my prophet and I'll give you another chance. And let's see whether you have changed your behavior towards him. And when we looked at history, we see that really that behavior was not changed. Ya Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah, we are here. We know you, we love you, and we will assure you that if you come in front of us, whether you come in front of us or whether your image comes in front of us, we will honor and respect him, Ya Rasulullah. Ya Allah, we will not desecrate the image of Rasulullah. We will defend his image. That's why those, whenever, my friends, whenever something is being told about Rasulullah, this is our own ghairat and honor that makes us defend Rasulullah. Someone who cannot defend Rasulullah, how can he go in front of Allah and say that, yes, Rasulullah was being told this and was said about this. What did you do to defend his honor? You have no respect for my religion. You have no respect for my religion. Ali Akbar is the son of Imam Hussein. Ali Akbar is the son of Imam Hussein. He came out. And who was Ali Akbar? It was, you know, really, for the whole of Ahlul Bayt, he was like the life of the households. The elders adored him and all the children loved him. Ali Akbar was like the nucleus. When he would leave his tent, when he would leave his room, when he would leave his house, then the whole of Bani Hashim would come out there that Ali Akbar is out. They all want to be with him. You know why? Because they say that Ali Akbar, not just in his image, but in his seerat, and the way that he talked, the way that he behaved, the way that he would smile, he was like Rasulullah. You know, people used to come far and wide when they used to say that, you know, we miss Rasulullah. They would come to the house, Hussein, and they said, just we want to see Ali Akbar one time before we leave. You know, they would make excuses. They would come to the house of Hussein as if they want to ask him a question, and they would be looking around the house to see if Ali Akbar would come. That one glance at the Prophet, one glance at someone, the image of the Prophet, that we will be happy with this. We will live with this memory for the rest of our life. Can you imagine this, my friends, how hard it is? No, really, I want you to imagine something right now. How hard it is that people, they remember Rasulullah that way because Rasulullah is away from us. Sometimes this is something that we can, it's so hard. A mu'min, if we are truly mu'min, how hard it is for a mu'min that he can live without his imam. Just like people used to remember Rasulullah, that one glance and that will be enough for us for the rest of our lifetime. Time. Now that we are living in the time when our imam is not here and present in front of us. Can you imagine this? that we can call to Imam and say, Imam Zaman, just one time if you show me yourself, I will be happy forever. I don't need anything else. How unfortunate are these eyes. This is the dua that we have from Ahlul Bayt. Make dua this way to Allah. How unfortunate are these eyes that we can see everything in this world, but we cannot see Imam Zaman. That Imam, this eyes cannot see you. What is the use of these eyes that I can see all these things? All this dunya I see, all these worthless things I see, but I don't see you, Imam Zaman. Come one time if you show me your face. Just show me one sort of compassion. I am happy for the rest of my life. I will never ask again. That's all I want from you. Oh, Ali Akbar, when he was around, people used to look like that. Can you imagine that? This is the love they have. That's why, my friend, don't think it's strange that anyone who is closer to us than Imam Zaman, if we see them closer to them, there's a reason that we fall in love with them also. We fall in love with them also. Why? Because they're closer to Imam than we are. We love you because you are with them. But this is your love that is speaking. And that was the love of Rasulullah that was speaking at that time. When Ali Akbar would be around, people would just want to stay there and see him, not take their eyes off. This was Ali Akbar. That's why when you see when Ali Akbar came to Karbala with Imam Hussein, Imam Hussein, with all the, Imam Hussein was not there to fight, my friends. This is why I'm saying, when you look at Karbala was not a battle. Karbala was not a war. Imam Hussein was not there to fight. Imam Hussein, because when you look at his weapons, when you look at his soldiers, when you look at his design for battle, you will see this is not a war. This is like as if he is trying to save someone. Say something to someone. Imam Hussein is trying to do that. That's why when the morning of Ashura came, Imam Hussein said, Ali Akbar, go and give the azan, Ali Akbar. Give the call for prayers, Ali Akbar. When Ali Akbar went out and he said, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. When he started to say the azan and the sound of the azan echoed in the land of Karbala and the people on the army of Yazid heard the azan, many of them remembered the voice of Rasulullah. He says, as if Rasulullah is giving the azan. As if Rasulullah is giving the azan. Maybe this might make you understand something. No, even the azan of Ali Akbar did not work, because right after the prayer, the first arrow started coming in. La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah. Ali Akbar, when the house of Imam Hussein, as I said, this was not a battle. This was just a protection of Ahlul Bayt, a sign of faith and a show of Iman. That's all it was from the side of Hussein. When you looked at the tents of Hussein, Karbala, even if you go there right now, you see that Ahlul Bayt pitched their tents first. The companions said to Ahlul Bayt, you pitch your tents first. When the Ahlul Bayt pitched their tents, then the companions, they said that we will make a boundary with our tents. That if they want to do something evil and attack us, then we will be the first ones to die before anything happens to you. You see that all around the tents of Imam Hussein were the tents of the companions.
Meaning there was one entrance, there was, that's it. All the other side was closed in. And all the companions said that if anything happens, we will be the ones. The doors were outside and they faced outside. So anyone who attacks will be the first one to see it. So now, as these tents were laid out and all of the companions were there in order to make sure that nothing happens to the children of Imam Hussein. Really, nothing happens to them. This was their faith. And you know, all of them, one by one, they died. All of them died. They gave their lives and it was over. It was over. Now, Hussein doesn't have any companions anymore. Now that Hussein doesn't have any companions, now the only thing left are his children. His brothers and children. They are the only ones left, the Ahlul Bayt. They are the only ones left. Just, I want you to see this, my friends. This is why you see that Imam Hussein, when he recognized, now it's only Ahlul Bayt left, without hesitation, without even hesitating, Imam Hussein came to Ali Akbar and said, Ali Akbar, are you ready? Ali Akbar, are you ready to do this? Imam Hussein did not hesitate. He would not even speak to anyone. He said, now if it's Ahlul Bayt's turn to die, then my son is going to go in first. I will send him first before anyone else. Ali Akbar, you go in. Go. Ali Akbar, without hesitation, when he saw that his father asked him to do that, without any hesitation, went for his horse. As he went for his horse, Imam Hussein called him back. He said, Ali Akbar, wait, where are you going? Not like this. Ali Akbar, but father used to ask me to go. He said, yes, I asked you to go, but not like this, Ali Akbar. You're different, don't you know that? You can't just go in like that. You're different. No, go in the tents. Go to the ladies. Go to Zainab. Bid farewell from them. That they should see you before you leave. Ali Akbar went inside. And as he went inside, really, he was so fast to go towards the battlefield that it was like he was not afraid of all. He just wanted to go in between thousands of enemies who were holding swords. But when Imam Hussein asked him to go to the tent, now Ali Akbar is hesitant. It's as if there's a wall that he cannot walk. He's sluggish in walking. He's slow in walking. He could face 1,000 enemy with soldiers, but how can he face the ladies of the household? How can he face Zainab? This was more daunting for Ali Akbar. This was more of a daunting task for Ali Akbar that he, when he went inside the tent, and all the ladies, they saw Ali Akbar come in there. That's it. They could not hold themselves back. Everyone started to cry. Everyone started shedding their tears. Everyone, the sisters came, the aunts came, the mother came. Everyone was around Ali Akbar and they were holding Ali Akbar. Hamid ibn Muslim says that I saw all the companions and all of Ahlul Bayt come out to fight. But this one son of Hussein had the hardest time of leaving the tents. He had the hardest time in leaving the tents because every time he would come out, someone would pull him back and said, one more time, let me see you one more time. Let me see you one more time, Ali Akbar. Don't go like this. Ali Akbar was having a hard time to get out. Let me just go forward. Ali Akbar came out. Came to his father, he says, I bid farewell to them. It was hard for Ali Akbar, especially his aunt Zainab, who raised him like a mother. It was hard for him to leave her like that. But when he came out, he came to Imam Hussein and said, Father, I'm ready. Imam Hussein, he helped Ali Akbar get on the horse. Put him on the horse. He said, Ali Akbar looked around, saw the battlefield and started trotting towards the battlefield. As if some shadow came and hit him, or he saw something from the from the side of his eye. Ali Akbar, for some reason, turned around and saw that Imam Hussein is following him. He saw that Imam Hussein is following him. His father. And Imam Hussein, as he's following him, he came there. Ali Akbar looked at him and said, "Father, you gave me the permission to leave. Why are you following me?" I mean, really, you know, Hussein, you know, Hussein, that's all we can say. Hussein, you only know what you went through. We cannot even describe what you went through, Hussein. I don't have the heart to even describe what you went through. All Hussein could say to Ali Akbar is that, "Ali Akbar, you don't know what it, how it feels for a father to see a son like you go towards death." "I don't know. You don't know, Ali Akbar, how it feels for a father like me to go to for you to see you." No one could bear Ali Akbar. Can you imagine Rasulullah going like this? That you would say, "No, let me go and die for you. You stay behind." Hussein put his hand on his heart and let Ali Akbar go. Ali Akbar goes to the battlefield, even though he's thirsty, but he is still a soldier. He is still from Bani Hashim. He is still from Ahlul Bayt. Thirst doesn't stop him. Hunger doesn't stop him. It is Iman that is letting him go forward. Ali Akbar is that person whose marifat is such that when Hussein on the way to Karbala was posed with a question and Hussein was trying to decide, then Ali Akbar looked at him and said, "What's the matter, father? Why are you worried?" He said, "Aren't we on the truth? Aren't we on Haq?" Hussein said, "Yes, we are. Then what have we to fear?" Hussein looked at him with so much pride at that day. He looked at him with so much pride. And on this day, he's seeing Ali Akbar practice those very words that he was saying in that time. Imagine what Hussein is feeling right now. When Ali Akbar went to the battlefield, he made the cry of call. One by one, they came out to fight him. They were no match for him. He would put them down. Then another person would come, he would kill them right away. He would cut their neck off. Then another person would come and another person would fall. Ali Akbar would fight like a brave soldier, so much brave and so much strong that they had no answer. Then they start sending three people out to him, and again he would cut them, again he would kill them, again he would do something to them, until a time came when no one wanted to fight Ali Akbar. And no one wanted to fight Ali Akbar. Ali Akbar would try to attack them. They would all run away from him. He says, "Cowards, come to me." What kind of a battle is this? I'm the one who's thirsty. I'm the one who's hungry. And you are running away from me. You're running away from me. Come back to me and fight me like men. But these are cowards. So Ali Akbar saw that no one is fighting him. Then all he could do is turn around and come back to his father. His father came out to meet him and said, "What happened, my son?" Ali Akbar did not want to go into many things. He just said, "Father, you know, this thirst is killing me out there. This thirst is killing me out there. This thirst is killing me. If I can get some water, just some water I can get, then I will show you, Father, and you will be proud of me." Oh, Hussein, how many times did his heart break at that very moment? Allah knows what Hussein had gone through at that moment. All his life, Ali Akbar, who was raised with Zainab,
Always he was raised with Zainab, and Zainab would fulfill his every wish to such an extent that there would be a time when Hussein would like complain to Zainab that, "Zainab, this is my son, but he never asked me for anything. He never gives me the chance to please him or to fulfill his wish." Zainab would say, with a mother like me, why would he go to anyone else? I would fulfill his wish. Hussein waited his whole life for Ali Akbar to ask him for something. His whole life he waited. Ali Akbar one time asked me for something. I'm your father, you know that. Ask me. Ali Akbar now is asking for some water, and Hussein looks around. Ali Akbar. Oh, Ali Akbar, there is no water. He didn't want to say that to Ali Akbar. He said, "Ali Akbar, come close to me. Come close to me. I will put out my tongue. And you come close to me and suck my tongue and take the moisture that's from my tongue. Do this, ma. That's all I can do for you, my son. That's all I can do for you." Ali Akbar came close. Ali Akbar came close. He wanted to gain some moisture, but then all of a sudden he shrieked, he cried, and he pulled back. Hussein said, "What's the matter, son? What's the matter? What's the matter?" He said, "Father, your tongue is more parched than my tongue. You have thorns on your tongue, Father." He said, "Go." Hussein said, "Go. Go. Now, oh, your grandfather, Rasulullah, will quench your thirst, Ali Akbar. Now go." Ali Akbar went back. He went back. And then as he went back, he started to fight again. People started coming in hordes, and he started fighting again until someone made a plan to attack Ali Akbar from the back. He took a long spear, and someone came to distract Ali Akbar from the front. And then as Ali Akbar was unknowing that someone is behind him, someone came and rammed that spear through the back of Ali Akbar, and it came through the front of Ali Akbar. The spear went through Ali Akbar. It came out from the front of his side. Ali Akbar is now on the horse, and he's now trying to hold himself up there. And he cried out to Hussein. He cried out to his father. No, not asking for help. He says, "Saddaqta ya Abi. You are right, my father. I see Rasulullah." I see him with a drink of water waiting for me. Ali Akbar, this is it. Before even Hussein can come to Ali Akbar, it is said that Ali Akbar fell unconscious for a while on the horse. He didn't fall off the horse. He was on top of the horse, and the horse went towards the army of Yazid. As it went towards the forces of Yazid, and they saw that this is Ali Akbar here. Everyone who saw Ali Akbar. Now I want you to see this. Ali Akbar is the image of Rasulullah, the picture of Rasulullah. I would say this: when they saw Rasulullah's image come, everyone took their turn to hit him on the back with their swords. Everyone was slicing and dicing at his body. "Leave him alone. He is unconscious. He cannot fight back." He cannot fight back. Leave him alone. When Hussein reached Ali Akbar, he fell, he was on the ground, taking his last breath. Hussein reached Ali Akbar, and Ali Akbar looked up at Hussein, and he said, Father, couldn't say anything. Voice wouldn't come out of his mouth. There was blood in his throat. It was clogged up. He couldn't say anything. He was just heaving high, breathing hard. Hussein saw him. He said, Ali Akbar, calm down, Ali Akbar. Relax, Ali Akbar. Try to relax, Ali Akbar. Imagine Hussein what he saw when Ali Akbar was on the ground. He was heaving and heaving. And when Hussein saw him, he's asking him to calm down. How hard is it for Hussein to take this image in his mind? Is he going to live after this? Hussein saw that there's a spear that stuck in his heart, in his chest. Hussein said, is this what's bothering you, Ali Akbar? Let your father take care of you. Let your father calm you down. Let your father put you to sleep, Ali Akbar. In life, I didn't have that choice. Today, I have this choice. Let me put you to sleep. Let me put you out of your misery so you can go. And Hussein took off that spear. As he took it off, Ali Akbar was no more. After that, Hussein said, Ya Ali Al Akbar, after you, life is not worth living, Ali Akbar.
سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلب.